A little background, herbicide meant for timberland rained down from a helicopter onto residential property in the Cedar Valley area of Curry County. That happened on October 16, 2013. Since then, residents have claimed to suffer from several health issues, including respiratory illness. They also say that some of the animals there were affected. As a result of that, a group of citizens have decided to file a lawsuit challenging the law in Oregon. Joining us this morning is Chris Winter. He is the executive co-executive director of the Cragg Law Center. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And we should point out that John Burns, who is one of the folks in that area and representing as a spokesperson, we're still trying to get him on the line. Hopefully we'll be able to, but if not, we'll go with you, Chris. Explain a little bit about this situation and what happened.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation. As you discussed, there was a group of citizens who own property, landowners down in the Gold Beach area, and they were sprayed and their properties were sprayed by a helicopter that was operating on two parcels of forest land in the area and ended up spraying a suite of chemicals, including 2,4-D and triclopyr on these properties, so very toxic chemicals.
Is this similar to what happened at Triangle Lake, or is that a different set of circumstances?
Well, it's a different set of circumstances, but it's very similar. It's rural residents who are basically getting sprayed by industrial forestry operations, and this has been happening around the state. Triangle Lake is a fairly well-known incident that happened a couple of years ago where some researchers came in and actually tested urine samples from citizens who have been complaining about being sprayed, and the state and the authorities were skeptical of those reports, and it turns out that 100% of those urine samples tested positive for pesticides and herbicides.
Now, the amount that they tested, if I remember correctly on this, their urine samples did show an elevation of the pesticides, but the agencies that were involved, the EPA, I can't remember who all was involved in that, but they decided that the levels were not high enough to be harmful. Is that correct?
Well, I think what the agency said is it wasn't conclusive as to whether or not it was harmful. So they weren't ruling out the fact that the citizens were experiencing either acute or chronic health effects, but they also weren't conclusively determining that they were. And so really it wasn't very helpful for the citizens down there. It didn't give them very much peace of mind to basically just have a big gap in the scientific uncertainty as to exactly how they can link the health problems that they think was caused by the spray to the amount and the concentration of chemicals they were exposed to.
Now, for the folks in Cedar Valley and Curry County, have they had any testing done?
So there was some testing done. I think the Oregon Department of Agriculture came down and took some samples from the properties, and it's been pretty well publicized that those samples came back positive for the chemicals that folks were concerned about.
Now, there's actually been some fines issued in connection with this spraying, hasn't there?
Well, there was just recently there was one fine that was announced by the Oregon Department of Agriculture against the pesticide applicator.
Now, what can a person do? I mean, is there any recourse outside of a legal channel to try to stop some of this spraying if you live very close to a farm or a forest area?
Well, there's actually very little that can be done. So here in Oregon, our system of regulation is very lax, particularly on this issue of pesticide sprays. So there's a very basic notification process that occurs, and that's managed by the Oregon Department of Forestry. ODF is supposed to, if requested by citizens, at least provide them advance notice. But the notices are not very specific, and there's no public comment. And there's really no standards that are applied. There's no approval by ODF. It's really just a notification to the agency and then a distribution of that information to the public. So there's really no way for the public to say, this type of pesticide spray is going to impact my family, my property, and to ask that the department not allow that to happen before it happens. And so it's really the only thing that citizens can do is try to defend their rights after they've been sprayed, which oftentimes is too late. And then they turn to state agencies who many times will not conduct adequate investigations.
What are you specifically asking for in the lawsuit?
Yeah. So there's a very onerous law on the books here in Oregon. It's called, ironically, the Right to Farm and Forest Law. But what it basically provides is that a pesticide applicator is immune from civil liability for a large majority of the the spraying of pesticides and herbicides. So unless they cause someone to die, or if there's serious bodily injury, or they're breaking a law or doing something else blatantly wrong, they're basically insulated from liability for nuisance or chemical trespass on someone's property. And so that's the law that we've targeted on behalf of these 17 citizens down in Gold Beach who've been sprayed, asking a court to declare that that law is unconstitutional under Oregon's constitution.
Are you asking for any personal damages as well?
Not at this point. The folks aren't asking for damages at this component of the proceedings. They really just want the court first to let them know whether this law is or isn't constitutional. They feel like they've had their private property rights stripped away from them, that as property owners they should have the right to keep people off of their property even if that person's not trying to do them serious bodily injury or trying to kill them, and that this law basically strips away those very fundamental property rights. So that's what they've asked the court to declare at this point.
If you have a specific question about property rights or spraying of herbicides and protecting your individual rights as well, give us a call here on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like with wind shifts and other things that happen that helicopter spraying can be pretty risky for folks who live near these areas. Is there an alternative method for applying these pesticides that would not have to, you know, face that thing?
Well, there certainly is. I mean, aerial application of pesticides has been pretty much eliminated on public lands for quite some time. And so it's very easy and straightforward to apply them by hand, and there's also methods for not having to use pesticides at all. And so many timberland owners are managing their private forests without the use of these chemical herbicides and pesticides. And where they do, they certainly have moved beyond, in many cases, aerial application because it is such a risky and such an inherently hazardous and dangerous activity.
If you were able to overturn this right to farm law, what does that process look like?
So if the law gets overturned, basically, court would say, you know, under the Constitution, we can't just strip away people's private property rights. The folks that got sprayed have rights to protect their property and their families, and that means that they can pursue claims for nuisance or chemical trespass against the folks that are responsible for this spraying activity. And so it would allow them to vindicate their rights for the damage that's been done. And it also would provide an incentive for other pesticide applicators and forest landowners around the state to be more careful in how they handle these chemicals and to give a little bit more respect to their neighbors and their property rights.
Lisa's on the line from Eugene with a question about laws and aerial spraying. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you. Chris, I wanted to ask this question about the right to farm and forest laws. I know other states have enacted similar laws because they want to protect certain practices in forest and farming. But maybe you could comment on the difference between Oregon's regulations and other states' regulations. For example, I've read that there are buffer zones for aerial spray in the state of Washington that protect homes and organic farms, but there are no such buffer zones in Oregon. Could that be contributing to this problem of people getting harmed by these sprays?
Yeah, that certainly is a problem. I mean, one of the reasons that the Right to Forest Act is so onerous here in Oregon is because there really are no other protections in place, like you said, to buffer impacts to streams, salmon habitat, schools, residences, and communities. And so those two things really combine to disempower rural communities and to put these folks in a very, very unfortunate situation. So the Right to Farm Act, those provisions, the problems with those provisions are compounded by the other lack of regulatory mechanisms in place to protect communities and our natural resources.
Around this area, it seems like there's a growing interest, maybe across the whole country, but especially here in organic farming. And I was wondering if, you know, how they're going to deal with that. Or will this become like maybe a moot point at some point in time about aerial spraying? It seems like it's pretty risky if you have organic farms.
It's very risky, and, you know, there's been situations around the state where aerial application of pesticides has actually impacted organic farms, has interfered with their certification. And so that's kind of handled under a separate component of the law, but it's absolutely a problem, and there's been conflicts between organic farming operations and pesticide and herbicide applicators, and so that's very much a concern for folks in these communities who are trying to move beyond that model of industrial chemical-based agriculture.
We had a caller that wanted to know if there's, or wanted to know a little bit more about the constitutional basis of this suit.
Sure. So there's there's a provision in the Oregon Constitution. It's called the Remedies Clause. And basically what it does is it guarantees folks like those who live in Gold Beach, Cedar Valley, that they will have a remedy for a violation of a fundamental right. And so the rights that are at stake here are their basic private property rights. And those property rights are very ingrained into Oregon's legal system. Oregon has a long history of vindicating and upholding property rights. And basically the Constitution guarantees that if someone has their property rights violated, then they should have a remedy for a violation of those rights. And so here the folks have been sprayed, their property rights have been violated, there was a chemical trespass that caused them damage, health injuries and impacts to their farm animals and their property, and they're saying, I need to have a way to vindicate my property rights.
I don't think we've talked about some of what's the specific ailments that people have mentioned. What have you heard?
Well, you know, there was a variety of acute responses to the pesticide exposure along a pretty wide spectrum. So there was nausea, dizziness, headaches, but there are also more severe reactions, respiratory problems, other types of reactions that ended up people were requiring medical care. And then over the long term, folks have expressed concerns over continuing symptoms, continuing nausea, dizziness, headaches, shortness of breath, those kinds of things. And so it's really been along a spectrum of responses, both short term and longer term.
Earlier we talked a little bit about Triangle Lake, and I did have a follow-up question that I forgot to throw in there. The result of the decision with Triangle Lake, is that going to make it a little more difficult for you in your lawsuit?
I don't think so. The case that we've brought is unique, and I don't think the situation at Triangle Lake is really going to bear much either way on how this case proceeds, but I do think that the incident in Triangle Lake has really helped to bring attention to this very serious problem that folks are facing around the state. And I think the Cedar Valley case has also highlighted that problem. And so regardless of what happens in this suit, I think it's really incumbent on the state to think hard about why the system is so broken right now, why folks are continuing to be sprayed like this, and what can be done to change the laws that we have to create more protections for folks like John and Barbara Burns.
Ryan is on the line in Eugene with a question about proving something is toxic. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, hi. I think this is a brilliant lawsuit, and thank you for bringing this to the table. But what you were just saying about the state agencies really concerns me, and it's embedded in our culture that you as a landowner have to prove that somebody else is doing something unsafe, as opposed to the applicator having to prove that it is safe. And I just think that's so embedded and ingrained in our industrial policy, whether it's ag policies at the state level or forest policies. And I just think it's an unfortunate case. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. The case as it goes forward, what kind of timetable are we looking at?
Oh, the timetables are uncertain right now. Litigation has uncertain timetables, so the case was just filed, and, the schedule is going to be determined as we move forward. So it's not as if it's something that is known as the case is filed.
The legislature, could they short-circuit this by changing the law themselves? In other words, head off having to go to court on this?
Well, I don't know if the legislature could head off this case. I guess that's a theoretical possibility. But I think what the legislature certainly could do is to change the right to farm and forest law to eliminate this exemption, this insulation from liability, this immunity for chemical trespass and pesticide and herbicide applications. And I think that would just provide a very basic level of protection for folks around the state. And in fact, what the law also says is that if the pesticide application falls within this immunity that's granted to pesticide applicators, the state agencies are directed not to investigate complaints from citizens. So the law actually directs state agencies to ignore citizen complaints if it falls within this immunity that's been granted to pesticide and herbicide applicators. And then the law also says that if someone sues because they've been sprayed and they lose, they have to pay the attorney's fees for the person that sprayed them. And so it takes a landowner who's been victimized once because they've been sprayed, and it creates a situation where they're victimized again simply for trying to vindicate their rights, and they're victimized financially.
And so
this whole legal structure is incredibly backwards, and it really just places these rural citizens in a huge disadvantage.
How did we get to the point where this law was enacted?
Well, you know, it was really, to the best of my knowledge, it was enacted at the behest of the pesticide and herbicide applicators back in the 90s. And so they were very well organized. They went to the legislature. They said, you know, we need protection for our activities, the use of these chemicals in forestry and farming operations, and we want to be insulated from legal liability. And we don't want the state coming around, poking their noses in and investigating what we're doing. And so they just went to the legislature, and the legislature gave them what they wanted.
You may have answered this in a previous question, but is there any hope of some kind of mitigation or sitting down with mediation to head off a lawsuit, or at least in the interim, to get what you might call a gentleman's agreement on this?
Yeah. Well, you know, mediation, arbitration, alternative dispute resolution, I think, is a very important tool. It's something we always advise our clients to consider. Litigation is always uncertain. And so it's absolutely important for folks to be thinking about if it's possible to work things out in a neighborly way with folks in their community. And I don't think this situation is any different. That said, the law is on the books, and it's a very onerous law, and it's going to continue to create very serious problems for these residential and rural communities around the state. And so at some point, that's going to have to be addressed. And it may be through this litigation, maybe the legislature can do something to release some of this pressure and to really improve the protections for these citizens. But at some point, something's going to have to change.
We weren't able to get John on the phone for technical reasons this morning, but I had a question. I wondered, do you know how those folks are doing now? What's the state of their health?
Well, again, it's mixed. A lot of folks are still continuing to feel the effects, and it's been almost a year. Folks have been having, you know, surgeries to address some of the problems, continuing to have dizziness, headaches. And it may be difficult for scientists to say, oh, this is definitely the cause. But when you're living down there and you know what your life was like before you got sprayed, and you are out in your yard when the chemicals rained down upon you and you got sprayed, and now you know what your life is like after, Those folks know very concretely that their lives have been changed for the worse because of this incident, and that their health is suffering. And so we're hearing a lot of that from folks down there.
What do we know about 2,4-D and atrazine?
Well, you know, 2,4-D is the active ingredient in Agent Orange. It's a defoliant. That's why it's used. It's extremely toxic. Atrazine is also toxic. It can cause low birth weight, so it's particularly toxic for pregnant women, for children, for the elderly, so folks that are, you know, susceptible and vulnerable to health effects. So these chemicals, when they get into our land and our air and our water, they're persistent, and they cause these types of effects both as a result of acute short-term exposure and longer-term exposure. And so they're really very, very dangerous.
Well, we certainly know that Agent Orange is effective at killing vegetation and hurting people. Are there alternatives to these chemicals that can be used?
Yeah, there certainly are alternatives. I mean, one alternative is to simply manage the property using hand removal methods. So there's really no reason that a timber company has to go out and aerially spray a new clear cut. Every time that it's been harvested, and there's no reason that they need to be harvesting on such a short rotation basis, which just increases the amount of chemicals that are applied to the land over time. And so this is, again, this is something we've moved beyond on Forest Service and BLM land, the aerial application of herbicides and pesticides over large swaths of land. That's just not done anymore on Forest Service and BLM land. So there's no reason that private operators need to be continuing that outdated practice.
Have you been able to work with the Oregon Department of Forestry on this?
You know, the Oregon Department of Forestry has not been very helpful. Again, they feel like, I think ODF has said that they feel their hands are tied by the laws that are in place and that they have very little authority to regulate these activities. And so ODF has really not been much help at all in trying to rein in these practices. And I think what you'll hear from the agencies, they just don't have the legal authority to do that. I also don't believe, frankly, that they have the political will to do that, but certainly the laws are also standing in their way. And ODA also has not been very helpful. I mean, to be frank, Beyond Toxics, we worked with them to ask for records related to this incident. And the agencies refused to turn over those records, and we actually had to go and appeal to the Attorney General of the state just to get documents about what happened down there and what the agencies were doing.
How often can a company spray? Is there a window of time where they're prohibited from coming back?
Not that I know of. Not that I know. So I don't believe, at least under state law, that there's any, you know, any rest period or waiting period in between applications. And so it might be something that's on the label of the pesticide that's determined, you know, when the pesticide's registered. But I don't believe that ODF or ODA has anything in place like that.
Are you getting some support and help from other organizations?
Well, you know, since we filed the case, there's been an outpouring of support from the public for the folks in Cedar Valley. And really, I think folks had expressed a lot of concern around the state about what they had heard had happened down there in October and then through the winter and into the spring. So the public has really supported the community vocally. And Beyond Toxics, like I mentioned, has been a very good partner with us as well, helping to organize the community down there and communicate with state agencies to make sure that they're following through on an investigation and trying to enforce the laws that are in the books.
We've been speaking today with Chris Winner, who is the co-executive director of the Cragg Law Center, talking about the pesticide spraying that happened out in Curry County. Chris, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry John couldn't be here. I know he was looking forward to it.
Well, we'll head into the Writer's Almanac now, right after we take a short break.